Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, September 28th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I'll be covering the front page today, then I'll move to Valley and State news, and end up with some national news. Stay tuned immediately following this broadcast is the second hour, which will complete the newspaper. So I hope you enjoy today's program. The entire front page is dedicated to influencing Arizona. Meet some of the people who have thrived as influencers. It's by Karina Vanek and Olivia Rose of the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Kalani Hilliker has been in the spotlight for most of her life. When she was 11, she became a regular on the Lifetime reality show Dance Moms, showcasing competitive young dancers and their firebrand coach. Now, as a 24-year-old, Hilliker, Kalani Hilliker on Instagram, still lives her life in full view of the public. Her 4.7 million TikTok followers have gotten to see her get engaged, celebrate her bachelorette party, and plan her upcoming wedding. Mixed in with posts about her dancing, going to the beach, and playing golf are videos of her promoting energy drinks, makeup, hair services, and other businesses that seek her out for her wide audience to market their products. Hilliker is one of thousands of people capitalizing on their social media platforms to market products, services, and experiences, and has learned to make a career out of it. "It's a privileged job to have," Hilliker says. "I'm in a very lucky position. If someone wants to do a brand deal for my bachelorette, sponsorships so my friends don't have to pay, I'm going to do it." Influencers have become their own type of celebrity, with followers looking to them for advice on fitness, beauty, family life, fashion, food, and entertainment. With an up-and-coming food scene and fast-growing population, Arizona has become home to many prominent influencers who have amassed followings around the country and internationally. Some Arizona social media personalities have piggybacked their influencing careers off stints in reality television, like Ari and Lauren Ludendyke, the former lead and winner of a season of The Bachelor. Others, like Matt and Abby Howard, have grown their following by creating popular social media channels, documenting their lives on TikTok and YouTube. Broadcasting your life to millions of people on social media can be profitable, with brands paying thousands of dollars to influencers to get a post on their feeds or placement in their stories. Influencer marketing has become such an important component to marketing that public relations and marketing companies have begun to put just as much emphasis on influencers as they do on more traditional advertising and media outreach, said Jennifer Kaplan, president and CEO of Evolve Public Relations and Marketing. Their following may be just as impactful as traditional media coverage, Kaplan said about working with influencers. Kaplan said businesses include paying for influencers in their advertising budgets. "If it is set up in the right way, I feel that influencers are extremely valuable and can really enhance and elevate a business," Kaplan said. Those partnerships can take many forms, but usually include paying an influencer to use a product or visit a business like a restaurant, hotel, spa, or entertainment venue, and then post about their experience. Businesses can also send influencers products to try or other promotional materials in the hopes they will post about them. The deals can also involve trades, like a hotel stay or a free meal in exchange for a post. And most influencers engage in all types of brand partnerships. Some influencers won't come in without getting paid, period, she said. Some are getting thousands of dollars. A mini reality show on their Instagram. JJ Garcia, who gained a social media following after appearing regularly on a reality show about his sisters, former WWE stars Brie and Nikki Bella, realized influencing can be a real career when his daughter was born. Our first big, big deal was Pampers, Garcia, the vacation JJ on Instagram said, of starting out in influencing with his now ex-wife, Lauren. They paid us $50,000 plus free diapers. We had done smaller deals of $1,000 here and there, and then we cleared Lauren's salary for the year with one deal. Influencing isn't a full-time job for Garcia, who also works at a recruiting firm with his mom, but it is for Lauren. It is the market of advertising, Garcia said, of influencing's impact. My ex-wife moves the needle when a product is getting posted. The global influencer marketing industry was estimated to be worth $25.44 billion in 2024 and projected to reach $97.55 billion by 2030, according to Grand View Research. Garcia said it is easy to see why people who have been on reality shows often find a lot of success as influencers. The successful influencers are basically doing a mini reality show on their Instagram every day, he said. For Kristen Keough, a former television news reporter and in-game host for the Arizona Coyotes, the money she makes for one sponsored Instagram reel equals what it would have taken 9 or 10 full shifts to make at her job in TV news. At my last TV news job, I made $75,000, but that is not that hard to make in influencing, she said. She is Kristen Keough on Instagram. After her son was born, she realized she didn't want to be spending all her time working at the TV station and decided to lean into a following she'd built while writing a hiking and outdoors blog for women. I needed a foot surgery and thought it was something a lot of hikers might need, she said. I reached out to the medical device company that made the device I needed, sent them a message on Instagram, and asked if they had ever worked with influencers. I got 19,000 followers at the time and got a $20,000 project with this medical device. Keough, who has also worked in making commercials and advertising, said an influencer does the job of producing, editing, hair and makeup, filming, writing a script, and other jobs that would all be done by multiple people on a film set. When you think about the 10 people that it takes to make a commercial, one influencer is way more effective, she said. A successful influencing career requires a person to stay relevant and hold an audience's attention, and attention can be fleeting. Growing an audience, it's all about passion. Some influencers started posting because they had large followings already on social media, but for others, a viral post launched a career option. Tatum Beck calls herself the weird big sister of the internet. She had planned to become a teacher and was doing her student teaching at a Valley high school during the COVID-19 pandemic. She and her brother Noah, who has since become an extremely successful influencer, started making videos, and he had one go viral. Both of their followings have grown with Tatum at Tatum Beck on Instagram, racking up 3.1 million followers, and Noah getting 33 million. "People started following me because I'm Noah's sister," she said, adding that she has tried to distance herself from her brother to create her own niche and following. After a bad experience left her disillusioned with teaching, she said she decided to dive into content creation. Around 2021, brands started to notice her, and she made videos with Circle K to promote their coffee machines, CoverGirl mascara, and Sonic Drive-In. She has a manager who negotiates with brands, but she does sometimes reach out to companies herself if there is a collaboration she wants to do. "Everything I've accepted has been things that I love," she said. She was recruited to join the Hype House, a group of popular social media stars who lived and made content together. She said she declined because she felt she had to stay true to herself and would hate living in a house with influencers. "So many tripods," she joked. The pandemic also pushed Alfie Maeda to launch her own business, both in fashion, styling, and influencing. She was furloughed from her job and wanted to try something new. "I utilized that time, starting creating style videos, how to put outfits together," Maeda at Alfie Like Taffy on Instagram said. She started tagging some of her favorite brands and letting them know she was a fan, and started getting noticed by some of the companies she loved. "It's all about passion and asking for what you want," she said. She still works as a stylist, but that work bleeds into her work as an influencer. Even though she is considered a micro-influencer based on the size of her following, Maeda said major brands notice her because she has strong engagement with followers and a strong presence in the industry. Major brands have worked with her, including retailer TJ Maxx, which flew her to New York City for a brand campaign. Aisha Beasley started blogging as a fun little hobby. More than a decade ago, after a friend encouraged her, she started a new Instagram account focused on fashion in about 2017. She later moved from Tucson to Phoenix for a job, but after moving to remote work during the pandemic, she decided to start posting on TikTok for fun. "I started a whole series on Arizona places. I wanted to discover new places, cute places I could go," she said. Her account, Aisha Beasley, on Instagram, grew partially because Arizona hosted the Super Bowl in 2023, and a lot of brands were in Phoenix to promote products. She has been able to make content creation her full-time job for the past 2 years. "When I quit my job, I had a plan in place," she said. "I made sure I had 6 months of savings, and I had to prepare to lose my health insurance. Now I always have to ask myself, am I getting steady work? Am I making enough? Now I'm making 3 to 4 times what I was making at my full-time job." Beasley's Instagram is full of videos of her visiting small businesses in Arizona or traveling around the state, giving reviews and recommendations. She likes to work with small businesses, but a lot of that is done for trade, she said, like a complimentary meal, stay, or service in exchange for posting about it. "Most of the money comes from collaborations with much larger businesses. She often works with Salad and Go and Fox Restaurant Concepts." Melissa Anaya wanted to start a marketing agency in 2017 and started taking on local restaurants as clients. She was relatively unknown to a lot of the restaurants she approached, so she decided to create a trusted presence on social media, so she could use it to pitch potential clients. She started her social media accounts, Eat Drink AZ, at Eat Drink AZ on Instagram, and grew as an influencer at the same time as she tried to build her marketing business. She has grown the business to also include employees, some of whom also make videos on her own social media influencing pages. If a business wants a post or video specifically from Anaya, it comes with a higher cost now, she said. Making money by sharing your life. Most money from influencing comes from brand sponsorships, where brands pay an influencer to come to their business and post about it, or use their products and share their experiences. Money paid for these types of posts can vary widely from a few hundred to tens of thousands of dollars. We all have different business models, Anaya said. Depending on what businesses she is working with, she tailors her rates and expectations. Often smaller restaurants don't have a budget to pay for influencer marketing, but can offer a trade, like hosting Anaya and a friend for a meal in exchange for exposure on her social media. But the real money comes from brands paying for that coveted exposure. Smaller influencers, she said, can make $500 to $1,000 per feature they create for businesses, while bigger influencers can easily make $1,000 to $5,000 per feature in her industry, Anaya said. Getting a viral video, even if it means doing that for free, can pay off and lead to several paid deals, she said. You're going to go out there to get the most viral videos for that exposure. Then the paid ones come in, Anaya said. When a buzzy new restaurant opens that influencers are clamoring to try and want to be the first person to post about, all bets are off, she said. It can be competitive, she said. I've seen people editing while they're eating. Garcia said his posts are often a mix of paid sponsorships and his sharing items he got for trades or promotions. Videos of him cooking or content with his two daughters are usually his most successful for viewership. I love making restaurant videos. I love supporting local companies, he said. I make a video and I can get a lavish dinner. Those posts, like videos made in a restaurant in exchange for dinner, are often trades, he said. But if a brand wants his kids in a video, they have to pay. We put it in an account for them, he said, of money made off content with his daughters. In the future, they will have a chunk of change. It will probably be enough to pay for their college. How much a business spends on influencing depends a lot on the work they expect the influencer to do, Garcia said. A reel for Instagram or a TikTok video is a common request, along with posting on their stories, which are only visible temporarily. Many who use influencing as a full-time job have managers and public relations professionals to help them negotiate their rates and manage the work that they take on. Another income stream can be from user-generated content, which does not get posted on the influencer's own pages. Instead, the influencer acts as a spokesmodel for the company, and the company then uses it on its own channels. Beasley said about half the time a brand reaches out to her for her sponsored posts, and the other half of the time she approaches them. I do decline a lot now. I can't take on everything, but I'll send a DM or an email if it's something I'm really interested in. Hilliker says she compares influencing to being a real estate agent. Sometimes sales are going great, and one major deal can bring in a lot of money, but those deals can be inconsistent. It's a nice way to make money but no one can take it for granted, she says. Kaplan has owned her company for 15 years, and in the past 7 to 10 years, influencer marketing has exploded in popularity to tailor a message directly to potential customers delivered by people who they are already interested in. Some of her clients, she said, want influencers before they want anything else. When ice cream giant Ben & Jerry's hired Evolve for local marketing and public relations, the first thing they wanted was to reach out to influencers. Let's scoop up some great, colorful, flavorful ice cream. Let's have them eating it. Let's have them take a photo of it, she said. They want it in a great cone that's dipped in chocolate around it so it can really convey and get people excited, especially in the summer. People can be cruel. The downside of living publicly. Making money by posting your life means much of your lifestyle and family are open to public scrutiny. While attention can bring money and social media stardom, it can also mean influencers have very little privacy and their life choices are fodder for public conversation. While Hilliker was quick to point out, influencing is a privileged job to have, it comes with its drawbacks. There's ups and downs, she said. It's not easy to deal with people criticizing you. People can be cruel. The cruelty of the internet is easy to find on her Instagram posts. Under a slideshow of photos of Hilliker and her friends at her bachelorette party, comments calling it revolting, trashy, and tacky were mixed in with comments from followers supporting her. I love the block button, she said. Protecting her own mental health has meant ignoring much of what's posted about her, she said. She has publicly shared her own struggles with mental health and said she hopes to be a role model for younger people experiencing online bullying. There's a lot of kids on social media now, and I teach kids, and it breaks my heart that they could maybe feel the way I felt, she said. Living publicly can also mean that the world gets a view of family tragedies. Popular parenting influencer Emily Kaiser's toddler drowned at home in Chandler in May. In court filings, Kaiser, who was not interviewed for this story, said the child's death had become a media frenzy. Deciding whether to show kids in online content is a tricky decision, influencers said. Garcia, who posts his daughters on social media, said there is a fine line for what should and should not be shared. People love content with kids, which is a sensitive subject, he said. Keo said she recently decided to stop showing her young son's face on social media, but he does appear in her content, either from behind or with something covering his face. She said she's also scaled back on posting about her personal life. It's for his protection. We know there are creeps out there, she said. When I was in TV news, I had to get 3 restraining orders in 1 year. Maintaining credibility while earning a paycheck. Being honest with an audience while still being paid to promote a product can mean walking a fine line on deciding what to share and what deals aren't worth it. Anaya said she won't post a negative video, but is selective when it comes to restaurants she will go to for content. For her, a restaurant cannot have a lower rating than a 4 on Google or a 3.8 on Yelp. I don't consider myself a food expert. I believe that every restaurant has a unique customer for them, she said. I would never destroy a business based on the 4 or 5 items I try. Anaya said it's very rare for her not to like something, but if it happens, she will ask to exchange it or give them a chance to fix it. She did go to a restaurant intending to post about it and was supposed to be paid for the content, but soon after found out it was on a dirty dining report about health code violations. I tore up their check and said I'd keep the content, but we would revisit it in a year, she said. Keo agreed it is rare for her not to like something, but won't post about it if it happens. Last year, she said, she and her family were hosted by a hotel and had a horrible experience. I told them I can't share this, she said. It wouldn't be unethical for me to share. It's more important for me to have trust from my audience. In the case of the hotel, it was a complimentary stay, not a paid sponsorship. But Keo said she would not take payment from a business she did not have a good experience with that wouldn't lend itself to a positive post. But Keo said a recent trend with brands working with influencers does concern her. She has seen contacts recently asking for user-generated content, meaning it won't be posted on her page, but part of the contract also requires the influencer to leave the company a 5-star review. Many times a contract like that is signed before the influencer even uses the product, meaning they are asked to commit to a 5-star review before they try it. To me, that's totally unethical, she said. Kaplan, the marketing executive, says she helps clients outline what the expectations from both the company and the influencer will be in terms of payment, products or services provided, and what posting they can expect in exchange. She said businesses will stay away from working with influencers who are known to bash on companies. She advises her clients to make sure they are communicating with influencers they hire about their experiences and address any issues, but said if a review is real, factual, and constructive, that can be part of soliciting influencer content. A negative post from an influencer can have a lasting impact, she said. It can really affect a business, she said. It can bring a business down, and that's the power of influencers. Local influencers can mean big exposure for small businesses. Some influencers, like Anaya, Keo, and Beasley, tailor most of their content to an Arizona-specific audience. By nature, Anaya's business of reviewing and highlighting restaurants creates a local focus, appealing to both Phoenix residents and visitors looking for places to try while they're in the state. She has also created travel guides with reviews and recommendations for local trips, like Jerome or Flagstaff. Keo built her brand focusing on hiking and outdoor activities in Arizona, but as her son has gotten older, he told her he didn't like hiking anymore. Now she focuses a lot of her work on recommending places to go for families with young kids, including family-friendly hotels, activities for kids, and products parents might like. She started a series of posts called Fun Places to Hide from the Heat to recommend activities for families to do with kids in the summer. I am so hyper-local, she said. What I like sharing is what I like to do in Arizona. Most of Beasley's content includes reviewing restaurants, bars, shops, and services like spa treatments offered at local Arizona businesses. She even filmed videos for her followers about apartment hunting and places she considered living in Phoenix, sharing pros and cons for people who might also be looking in the city. She also created a series about local black-owned businesses and events tailored to the black community in Phoenix. I am a black creator, so it is so important to me to highlight black businesses, she said. For other creators who focus more on national brands, the location matters less. If I can do my job from anywhere, why not do it from here? Hilliker said of her hometown of Scottsdale. Hilliker does feature local restaurants, hotels, and bars in her content, but her audience is much less geographically focused. For Beck, who also grew up in the Valley, she could probably get more brand deals if she lived in L.A. like her brother, but said for now she likes living in Arizona. It's my little bubble, she said. I don't feel like I have to dress a certain way or act a certain way. None of the influencers interviewed for this story moved to Arizona for his or her influencing career, but a law in California that extended financial protections for child actors to child influencers could bring changes to the industry. California's law and others like it has requirements concerning payment for children who are featured in content that generates money. Illinois, Minnesota, and Utah have also enacted laws regarding payment to children featured in influencer content. Does influencing have a lifespan? An influencing career depends on staying relevant and capturing enough of an audience that brands are willing to fork over money in exchange for that exposure. Most expect that their relevancy does have a shelf life, but how long an influencing career can last is anyone's guess. Few of the creators interviewed for this article completely relied on influencing for their income, with most mixing in other work to supplement it. While my son was little, this is what worked best for us, Key said of influencing, but she was also recently hired as the host of Trail Mixed, a half-hour hiking-focused show on Arizona PBS. She will host the show's third season, which will include 8 episodes. Beck has her eyes set on leaving Arizona, aiming to move to Hawaii. Whether she will continue her social media career there is yet to be seen, she said. Brand deals have been slower, she said, of her recent work. Social media was not my end-all, be-all. Hilliker said income from influencing has given her time to return to her real passion, dancing. She teaches dance and has dreams of opening her own studio someday. She said her videos of teaching dance are usually the content that gets the most positive response, which makes her proud. Call me a good dance teacher, she said, it's all I care about. And that completes the article. The author, Corina Vanek, covers development for the Arizona Republic. You can reach her at cvanek@arizonarepublic.com. The name of the article was Influencing Arizona. I'll take a brief moment to remind those of you that may have tuned in late, this is the first hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, September 28th, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. Part 2 of the Arizona Republic will follow this broadcast immediately. Next up is the Valley and State News, and there's just one short article on that page as well. It's written by Bill Goodykoontz, a columnist for the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. The title is Phoenix is Hot, and It's Not Just the Weather. At Valley 101, a podcast by the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com, we try to answer as many listener and reader questions as we can. For that to work, of course, you have to ask us questions. That's what happened this week when a listener noted all the people who keep moving to Phoenix, which is already the 5th most populous state in the country. Sorry, Philadelphia. Forgive us, it's a long-standing joke between the two cities, locked for a long time in the battle for number 5. Guess who came out on top? The listener wondered, with perhaps more snark than this sounds, why is Phoenix so popular? But the spirit of the question was more like, what's so great about Phoenix anyway? I have some ideas. I've lived in the Phoenix metro area for more than 35 years, after all. Well, 34 there, one in Kingman. That just felt like about 10. But I also talked with some folks who know something about what actually is pretty great about Phoenix. Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego, as you might expect, is a big fan of the place, and she has sky-high hopes for the future. Sean McLaughlin, popular meteorologist and friend of the show, actually moved here, moved away, and then moved back again. His reasons gave me a perspective on the place I've never really considered before. I weigh in a little with my own ideas about what's great about the city. It's got its problems, sure, but there's a reason people keep moving here, and why they stay. Give it a listen and send in your own questions so that we can answer these. You can reach Goody Koontz at bill.goodykoontz@arizonarepublic.com. I'll move now to some of the news in the Nation and World section of the paper. This article is titled West Back at Drawing Board. After snapback of sanctions, issue appears headed for drawn-out standoff. By Harissa Hafazi, John Irish, and Francois Murphy of Reuters. The snapback reimposition of UN sanctions on Iran, lifted under a 2015 nuclear deal, sends Western powers back to the drawing board on how to contain and monitor Iran's nuclear program, diplomats and analysts say. European powers France, Britain, and Germany, known as the E3, had hoped the snapback threat would make Iran yield to demands such as quickly letting UN inspectors return to nuclear facilities bombed by Israel and the United States in June, and resuming talks with the United States on its atomic activities. But despite a last-minute rush of diplomatic activity at the UN General Assembly in New York, the E3 said Iran had done too little for them to stop snapback going into effect on September 27, a month after they set the 30-day process in motion. This snapback mechanism is the West's last bullet. Once they pull the trigger, they'll have nothing left, a hardline Iranian lawmaker said in the dying hours of negotiations on condition of anonymity due to the sensitivity of those talks. The stick they've been holding over our heads, once it's gone, once it's used, it's gone. They won't have any more leverage. U.S. playing its, quote, Trump card. Western diplomats argue that, on the contrary, the United States and E3 will have the leverage of offering to lift these and other sanctions. But getting sanctions lifted is an arduous process, less likely to yield quick concessions like the ones the E3 had recently sought. The U.S. played its Trump card in bombing key Iranian sites. And while the nuclear program has certainly been set back, it has not been eliminated, said Eric Brewer of the Nuclear Threat Initiative think tank. Iran is not willing to meet U.S. terms for a deal, but the U.S. still clearly needs a deal for any sustainable solution. So in many ways, we're back to where we started, he said. The sanctions snapping back require Iran to suspend all enrichment-related activities and ban imports of anything that could contribute to those activities or to the development of nuclear weapon delivery systems like ballistic missiles. The 2015 deal between Tehran and major powers restricted Iran's atomic activities in exchange for sanctions relief. It worked as planned for 2 years, until President Donald Trump pulled Washington out in 2018 and reimposed U.S. sanctions. Tehran responded by rapidly expanding uranium enrichment to the point that Israel and the United States said they had no choice but to bomb Iran's atomic sites in June. Western powers say there is no civilian justification for Iran's advanced uranium enrichment, fearing it is moving toward nuclear weapons. Iran denies seeking the atomic bomb. Iran plans to respond. With snapback kicking in, Iran has said it will retaliate diplomatically, indicating it might scale back cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency even further, just as Western powers and the IAEA are demanding answers on the status of its large stock of highly enriched uranium. If the snapback mechanism is triggered and sanctions return, we will definitely reconsider our relationship with the IAEA. Restrictions on inspections will certainly be tightened, a senior Iranian official said shortly before it kicked in. After Israel launched its bombing campaign, Iran's parliament passed a law suspending cooperation with the IAEA and requiring inspections to be approved by its Supreme National Security Council. Iran and the IAEA announced an agreement earlier in September that was supposed to pave the way toward a full resumption of inspections, but there has been little progress since then. E3 diplomats said they would return to what has been their strategy since 2003, a mixture of pressure and dialogue. In contrast to a decade ago, however, major powers are divided after events like the war in Ukraine, making it harder to pressure Iran into an agreement. Russia and China made a last-gasp attempt to avert snapback at the UN Security Council on September 26th, which failed. Iran's cooperation with the IAEA is already limited and could deteriorate further, but I don't think it will take the leap to pull out of the NPT, or Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, one E3 diplomat said, adding that he did not think China or Russia would accept Iran rushing to the bomb, and if they did, Israel wouldn't. An Israeli official said Israel had no reason to renew strikes on Iran for now unless Tehran advanced its nuclear program clandestinely, adding, "They know we are watching." The diplomatic standoff appears set to enter a tense, drawn-out phase, with uncertainty over what Iran is doing on the ground likely to grow while IAEA inspectors are absent. For the Iranians, the nuclear program's growth was their key point of leverage before the war. Now it is its opacity, said Ali Vaiz of the International Crisis Group. But it's a risky gambit. If Iran attempts to revive elements of its program and is detected despite the absence of IAEA inspectors on the ground, it will only fuel concern over its intentions. And that completes the article. The title was West Back at Drawing Board by Parissa Hafazi, John Irish, and Francois Murphy of Reuters. The next article is Trump orders troops to Portland. Local officials push back on need for U.S. military. It's by Christina Cook and Phil Stewart of Reuters. President Donald Trump on September 27th said he was directing the U.S. military to deploy to Portland, Oregon, and to protect federal immigration facilities against domestic terrorists, saying he was authorizing them to use full force if necessary. Ordering the latest crackdown on a Democratic-led city, Trump said in a social media post that he was directing Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, formerly called the Secretary of Defense, to provide all necessary troops to protect war-ravaged Portland and any of our ICE facilities under siege from attack by Antifa, and other domestic terrorists. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson, responding to Trump's order, said, "The number of necessary troops is zero in Portland and any other American city. The president will not find lawlessness or violence here unless he plans to perpetuate it. Violent crime in Portland has dropped in the first 6 months of 2025, data shows. Homicides fell by 51% compared to the same period a year earlier, according to data released by the Major Cities Chiefs Association's mid-year violent crime report. That report showed Portland had 17 homicides in the period, compared with 56 in Louisville, Kentucky, and 124 in Memphis, Tennessee, which have comparable population sizes." In a news conference on September 27th, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek, a Democrat, rejected the need for troops and said she spoke with Trump and Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. "There is no insurrection, there is no threat to national security, and there is no need for military troops in our major city," Kotek said. "I'm going to continue communicating that to the president, and I hope he will be open to reconsidering the deployment." U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, wrote on X that Trump, quote, "may be replaying the 2020 playbook and surging into Portland with the goal of provoking conflict and violence," end quote. In 2020, protests erupted in downtown Portland, the Pacific Northwest enclave with a reputation as a liberal city, followed the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. The protests dragged on for months, and some civic leaders at the time said they were spurred rather than quelled by Trump's deployment of federal troops. Tensions in major cities. It was unclear whether Trump's warning that U.S. troops could use full force on the streets of Portland meant he was somehow authorizing lethal force, and if so, under what conditions. U.S. troops are able to use force in self-defense on domestic U.S. deployments. The Pentagon did not offer any clarification about whether Trump was deploying National Guard, active duty troops, or perhaps a mix of the two, as was the case in Los Angeles earlier this year. "We stand ready to mobilize U.S. military personnel in support of DHS operations in Portland at the president's direction. The department will provide information and updates as they become available," said Sean Purnell, a Pentagon spokesperson. Asked about the Portland decision on September 27, Department of Homeland Security spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin said immigration and customs enforcement agents needed to be protected amid protests against immigration raids. "We're not going to put up with it. This administration is not playing games," she said in an interview on Fox News. Portland Police Chief Bob Day said there had already been an increase in federal law enforcement in recent days to bolster security at the ICE facility in the city's southwest. "There have been growing tensions in major U.S. cities over Trump's aggressive immigration crackdown days after a shooting targeting an ICE facility in Dallas left one detainee dead and two others seriously wounded. Trump focus on crime and Antifa. On September 25th, Trump told reporters that crazy people were trying to burn buildings in Portland. "They're professional agitators and anarchists," he said, without providing evidence. Trump earlier in September signed an executive order that declares the anti-fascist Antifa movement a domestic terrorist organization as part of a crackdown on what he claims is left-wing-sponsored political violence. According to U.S. law enforcement, there has never been a terrorist incident in the United States connected to Antifa. Trump first sought to designate the movement as a domestic terror organization during the nationwide George Floyd protests. The most notorious episode involving the movement occurred in Portland in August 2020, when Michael Reinall, a self-identified Antifa supporter, shot and killed Aaron J. Danielson, a member of the far-right group Patriot Prayer. Reinall was killed by federal and local law enforcement officers during an attempt to arrest him. Trump has made crime a major focus of his administration, even as violent crime rates have fallen in many U.S. cities. His crackdown on municipalities led by Democrats, including Los Angeles and Washington, has spurred legal challenges and protests. The Trump administration's goal of deporting record numbers of immigrants living in the United States illegally has framed the push around criminals, but it has arrested many people without criminal records. Residents in New York, Chicago, Washington, and other Democratic-leaning metro areas have pushed back in recent months. And that completes that article, "Trump Orders Troops to Portland," by Christina Cook, Phil Stewart, and David Lundgren. I don't really have time left for another article, so I'll look at the Daily Almanac for today. On this day in history, 1542, Spanish explorer Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo landed in what is now San Diego Bay, marking the first European expedition to explore the west coast of what would become the United States. Cabrillo's arrival initiated contact between European explorers and the indigenous Curuneya people. In 1779, Samuel Huntington was elected president of the Continental Congress, succeeding John Jay. His presidency was marked by efforts to maintain unity among the colonies and support the ongoing struggle for independence. In 1781, the Battle of Yorktown began when General George Washington, leading a combined force of 17,000 French and Continental troops, initiated a siege against British General Lord Charles Cornwallis and his 9,000 troops at Yorktown. It marked the start of the most decisive battle of the American Revolutionary War. In 1829, David Walker published his powerful anti-slavery pamphlet, Walker's Appeal, in Boston. The pamphlet, which denounced slavery and racism, quickly spread and became a significant document in the abolitionist movement. In 1850, the U.S. Navy officially abolished flogging as a form of punishment through an act of Congress, which was signed into law by President Millard Fillmore. It ended a practice that had been a source of controversy and criticism for many years. 1868, the Opelousas Massacre occurred in Opelousas, Louisiana, resulting in the deaths of an estimated 150 to 300 black citizens. The massacre began when three white supremacists attacked Emerson Bentley, a black Republican newspaper editor and teacher, because he advocated for voter registration and education for all. In 1918, a Liberty Loan parade in Philadelphia led to a massive outbreak of the Spanish flu, infecting thousands. Within 72 hours, all hospital beds in the city were filled, and the death toll rose rapidly. In 1919, race riots erupted in Omaha, Nebraska, culminating in the lynching of Will Brown, an African-American man, and resulting in the deaths of two white rioters, along with significant damage to the Douglas County Courthouse. A white lynch mob formed after a white woman, Agnes Lobeck, accused Brown of raping her. 1965, Cuban President Fidel Castro announced that any citizen who wished to leave the island was free to do so. This led to a significant wave of immigration, with many Cubans heading to the United States. And lastly, 2008, SpaceX launched Falcon 1 into space, becoming the first privately owned company to send a liquid-fueled rocket into orbit. It helped SpaceX secure key contracts, including a major one with NASA. And here are some birthdays today. Actor Brigitte Bardot turns 91. Actor Vernie Watson, 76. Writer-director John Sayles, 75. Comedian Jeannie Garofalo, 61. Actor Mira Sorvino, 58. Singer Moon Zappa, 58. Actor Naomi Watts, 57. Singer Karen Fairchild of Little Big Town, 56. Rapper Young Jeezy, 48. TV personality Bam Margera, 46. Actor Jerrica Hinton, 44. Musician St. Vincent, 43. Comedian Phoebe Robinson, 41. And actor Hilary Duff, 38. And that's the birthdays for today, and that completes the broadcast today. This has been the first hour of the Arizona Republic, the Sunday, September 28, 2025 issue, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader today. Please stay tuned. Following immediately is hour two of the Arizona Republic, which will complete the newspaper. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.